This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And there's more at the website, allbook-books.com. So the security guard for Allied Universal, which according to Wikipedia has 800,000 employees, in the video I watched was IDing the native woman, Josephine, a grandmother at Thacker Pass, Behemoth, so she could get her sacred items back. And when eventually she got them back, and the security guard said, "Is there anything else I can help you with?" The guy with the native woman said, "Yeah, you could stop mining for lithium and let there be clean air and clean water." Some of this reported at Censored News. And it's all one story when you look at how it all connects. And it's the same kind of nonsense that's been going on. Got the Lithium Americas. They're out of Vancouver. So they're working with the U.S. government. And then there's Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the Bureau of Land Management. And she's a native. She's a Laguna Pueblo woman. And she swore on a Christian Bible to do her job, and so she's doing her job by not stopping the mining. And according to the article at Centers News, this is violating federal laws that protect Native American religious sites and burial places. And then just recently, they put up a fence. They built a metal fence, a barbed wire, I guess it is. They built a fence. It's just astounding. Built a fence around one of their sacred sites. Sentinel Rock and Nipple Rock is blocked with a metal fence. No trespassing. Now, this is like if you're Catholic and you want to go to St. Patrick's Cathedral and you get there and, oh, who knows? Say the Chinese or Saudi Arabia or some fence corporation has put up a fence and you cannot go in there. But this goes barely noticed, and it's all one story, meaning it's U.S. empire, it's global corporate empire, because you've got foreign companies messing with native peoples and U.S., quote, U.S. lands. And these are the same things I've been mentioning in the recent books, The Rare Metals War and Cobalt Red, it's all the same story and bright green lies, because the mining is for the, so-called clean energy and so-called improvements. But what improvements is it? And much of this goes unknown and much of this is oblivious to people, rightly so, in that they're scrapping to people scrapping to pay the bills and such like. But then again, given a little bit of time, people I know, they're so busy, but then given a little bit of free time, they don't really want to know about this stuff. Or if they do, it's in passing and, oh, you know, that's too bad. But that leads me to quote from another book I'm reading and eventually plan on doing probably a series. So I want to read this section, and I read this to someone else the other day, and I said, see if you can guess when this was written. As words lose their communicative function, they acquire more and more of a frightening regulatory and conditioning function. Official words must be believed and must be obeyed. Dissension and disagreement become both a physical and an emotional luxury. Vituperation and the power that lies behind it is the only sanctioned logic. Facts contrary to the official line are distorted and suppressed. Any form of mental compromise is treason. In totalitaria, there is no search for truth, only the enforced acceptance of the totalitarian dogmas and clichés. The most frightening thing of all is that, parallel to the increase in our means of communication, our mutual understanding has decreased. A babble-like confusion has taken hold of political and non-political minds as a result of semantic disorder and too much verbal noise. So that's from Joost Merlu, MD's book in 1956. The Rape of the Mind, The Psychology of Thought Control, Menticide, and Brainwashing. So that tells me that essentially, except for the gadgets on steroids, nothing has changed. The basic thinking, free thinking, and the repression, that nothing has changed in the thinking pattern of these maniacal manipulators. Here's another section. He calls it label mania. The urge to attach too much meaning to the label of an object or institution and to look only casually at its intrinsic value is characteristic of our times and seems to be growing. I call this condition label-omania. It is the exaggerated respect for the scientific-sounding name. The label, the school, the degree, the diploma, with a surprising disregard for underlying value. All about us, we see people chasing after fixed formulas, credits, marks, ranks, and labels because they believe that if one is to have prestige or recognition, these distinguishing marks are necessary in order to obtain acceptance. People are prepared to undergo most impractical and stylized training and conditioning, not to mention expense, in special schools and institutions which promote certain labels, diplomas, and sophisticated facades. Well, there it is. That's my phrase. That's the phrase I like to pluck. The book is very well written. I'm like halfway through it. And sophisticated facades. That's the phrase. It's all a facade. The whole the green, the caring about the climate and the environment and all that stuff and all the products and this and that and the institutions that support it and the newspapers, it's all a facade. They're not telling you the real. They're not telling you the real McCoy unless you look a little deeper. Doing it a little shorter this week after doing the four part book series. So I'll finish up with this is a poem I wrote a while ago, but it segues to the sophisticated facade and the various issues that I see going on. This is called The Land of Instant Gratification. In the land of instant gratification, the coffee is lousy, the milk non-dairy. The sex is okay, but you can't remember their names. And the time is always right, but no one remembers who they are or what they're there for. And the distracted are mutely sucking up the half-truths of the up-to-the-second news like cotton candy addicts, like moths to the flame, like couch potatoes with sprouty bulging eyes, ears buzzing and swelling from media mosquito sound bites. In the land of instant gratification, there is no steeped tea, no small heroin dosage to slowly wean the addict. No marinated for a week, no simmering pot, no homegrown, no put out on a log to dry. No group consensus, no insight gleaned from tireless contemplation, no investigating the facts, the reality, the motivations, no gazing into the future. And no one gives a heartfelt apology. In the land of instant gratification, inner contentment may be the only real ticket home. So I write that. Inner contentment may be the only real ticket home. I write that from a somewhat privileged perspective, because if you're like on the front lines, like the Shoshone, Paiute, and the non-natives that are helping to stop the lithium Americas, to stop the mining that's destroying the habitat, and we'll use like, oh, not much less than 2 billion gallons of water a year if the mine continues. And that's in a water scarce drought area. Inner contentment may help, but that's going to require action. And that is requiring their action and their 24/7 putting their bodies right there on the line to protect that place. Much depends on your vantage point, but obviously the point of my poem is that this culture of instant gratification, it just continues to feed the insanity. And so I guess the conundrum is, how do you slow down but still sort of navigate the day-to-day world? All right, thank you for listening, and be well.